Start and end your day with the good news. The Good News with Angie Austin. Find the podcast of past shows at AngieAustinRadio.com. Now, here's Angie Austin and friends with the good news.
Oh, yeah. We've got Luke Zamperini, Louis Zamperini's son, coming up. Are you familiar with, did you see Unbroken, the movie, Moose?
You know, I never got a chance to. I read a little bit of the book, but I never got a chance to see the movie. But I have a whole list of everything that I want to do during my holiday break for Christmas, because I'm taking 11 days off. I haven't really had a day off all year long, so I'm taking 11 days,
wow.
And it's on
Me
the
too.
List.
Me too. How convenient. We're off at the same time.
Yep. As if that were orchestrated
I love
by
it.
A certain producer.
All right, so Luke Zamperini is Louis Zamperini's son, and not only the movie and the book Unbroken, but there's a book that his dad wrote right before his dad died. His dad was in his late 90s when he passed away, and 2 days before he died, he finished this book, Never Give Up, Never Give In, Lessons from an Extraordinary Life. And the guy was really extraordinary. I mean, he did not give in. You couldn't, like, break him mentally. And so Luke joins us from time to time to share stories from his dad's book. And I think we're going to go into chapter 4. And he's just got some neat stories because he traveled with his dad when his dad would speak, especially when he got into his 90s.
Oh, okay.
So he knows
every
story.
Story inside and out.
And part of what they don't show in the movie is that his dad's life really changed when he came back from the war. He had nightmares every night about Bird, the guy that would abuse him in the prisoner of war camp.
Right.
And every night he would dream that he was killing Bird. Mm. And then he went to a Billy Graham revival. And that was not, I'm surprised that wasn't part of the movie because it was life changing. For his dad. His dad became a Christian, and that night his nightmare stopped and he never had that nightmare again.
Oh, wow.
Isn't
healing
that wild?
Power of God right there.
Yeah, and like nightmares where he would wake up in the middle of the night killing Bird and sweating. And he was having problems with drinking as well. And all of that stopped after the Billy Graham revival. Those revivals, like I read some history on all those, they were unbelievable the way he just traveled around the country and how many people were saved.
Yeah, and just, you know, such power and charisma from that guy, and just, you know, power of God was blessed upon him and just be able to change lives left and right.
Super neat. All right, and then coming up after that, Lee Clayton Roper was on a few years back. She's a friend of mine. She was on Channel 2 with me weekly, and she did a cooking segment. And it was the coolest thing when she wrote A Well-Seasoned Kitchen. She did it with her mother, and now she has a new cookbook out, and they're spectacular, aren't they? It's called Fresh Tastes.
Well, I say it's very mean of her to send me this amazing cookbook and have it sit on my desk for a week, and I just stare at all these beautiful pictures and just, you know, probably gained 10 pounds just from looking at that book.
They are amazing. I mean, this isn't like one of these cookbooks you pick up that's all paperback and hardly has any pictures. It's chock full of the most amazing pictures, which, the reason that I wanted to have her back, first of all, it's a beautiful story, like a love story between a daughter and mother. When her mom started to lose her memory and started to decline and get up in years, she wanted to work on something with her mom that her mom could still do and be engaged in. And her mom was an incredible cook and entertainer. Her dad was a doctor, and he would just call home and say, "Hi, honey, I'm bringing 5 people home for dinner. We're going to have a little impromptu dinner party." And her mom would just get everything ready, and they loved to entertain people that meant a lot to them, mm-hmm. kind of the way in Christian circles we still do that with Bible study and, you know, Bible party, which does like a potluck and those gatherings. But she didn't want her mom to lose her memory before she got all her recipes written down. And I just love the idea that they did it together at this, like, the love between them created this beautiful book.
And a way to, you know, help mom hold on to the past times and not feel like her entire world's falling apart. And
that she had value.
Oh, of course.
And the recipes she would find just, like, tucked away, like, she thought they were all in recipe boxes, but they were hidden away in, like, books and in cupboards and under this and in between that and in this storage shelf. And she couldn't believe all the places her mom had handwritten recipes tucked away. And then even in cookbooks, she would change recipes and she'd write on the side of the cookbook the changes she made.
Yeah, my mother-in-law has a cookbook because they kind of did something similar years ago with her mom and kind of wrote everything down. And there's, of course, you know, line out to the side, you know, this works better for this type of season, and if you do this, and like if you have more than 10 people, then you want to use this kind of seasoning or else it'll be overpowering. And so
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I love cookbooks like that. All right, so I want to share with you before we go to Luke Zamperini one good news story. Louis Zamperini was in a prisoner of war camp, and I just think that people who come out of difficult situations like that, he's a prime example of how there's hope. Well, this is a completely different prisoner situation. These are actual prisoners that have done wrong, but they set up a program where they could graduate. And don't we all want the recidivism rate to be lower? Don't we all want these men and women not to come back to prison?
Of course.
So they're graduating and getting their high school diploma. So I just thought it was kind of an inspirational story of turning their lives around.
Graduating high school.
Good morning, everyone.
Guarantees little. Not a better job, not a better life, just a much better chance.
We are going to begin the best thing that's ever happened at Lee Arendelle State Prison.
The 19 women receiving diplomas here have committed serious crimes. They are serving sentences of several years, and they are about to make history.
You are the very first high school graduates to ever graduate while in a Georgia correctional facility.
Most states allow inmates to receive GEDs. Georgia is now one of the few that goes further, using charter school provisions and relaxed testing standards to enable its inmates to graduate high school.
An education in the correctional system reduces recidivism.
That's Dr. Buster Evans, who 1 year ago took the educational mantle at the Department of Corrections.
Every year, we send nearly 20,000 inmates back to communities.
We're in a place where physical power is completely out of our hands.
This is Jasmiah Whitehead. She was incarcerated at age 16.
Having the chance to attain something that I long ago deemed impossible was the opportunity of a lifetime.
Through the night.
Leaders across the state and nation are tackling the topic.
Jasmine Smith.
Providing pathways for those put away. All Today guarantees is that 19 inmates now have diplomas. From top to bottom, many are betting that's a big step.
And it is a big step, especially because their diploma, because now the GED standards are even more difficult with the math requirements. And I mean, at 16, if she was incarcerated, I would betcha she had a terrible life.
Oh, you know, growing up, I mean, you don't really know what her background is, but to be in that point at 16, to be able to do something to where you have to be in prison for several years, you know, she didn't have much positive influence.
And, you know, some of these kids that are being brought up in circumstances that are really unsavory with drug addicts for parents, and again, we're not saying she had that background, but a lot of these kids that end up incarcerated as teenagers aren't given a chance. And wouldn't it be wild if they were given more of a chance in a prison system than they were in their own homes to get an education and to be fed and taken care of?
Yeah, it's just amazing to see, you know, it's no longer bread and water and here you're chained to the wall, but to be able to treat them as human beings and to be able to say, yeah, you screwed up, but here, let's make your time here as good for you as possible and, you know, make you a better human being.
And I absolutely loved the reporter's voice, the way that he voiced it over. It was very touching. And I wanted to also mention, I know I'm a teaser, you and I did a story within the last year. Recall that they changed the name of the facility, and it was, you know, because we had a juvie facility, prison type system, and they renamed it like, you know, Charter School for the, you know, Gifted or something.
Yeah.
And they said by renaming it, they took the stigma away from these kids, and they have had so much success with the kids learning when they're like valued more or more proud of where they're attending. And granted, it's still a lockdown facility, but they said what we wanted to find out what would happen if we gave these kids the same level of education and the same, the great teachers and everything that a kid of privilege would get.
Exactly.
And it was so successful.
Yeah, just all about the name and the stigma and the weight that it carries.
Yeah, and they really invested in the teachers and the system as well. All right, so as we change gears here, Moose, I think you'll get a kick out of this interview. Again, Louis Zamperini, many of you saw the movie Unbroken that chronicled his life, but before he passed away, he wrote the book Never Give Up, Never Give In, Lessons from an Extraordinary Life. But many people don't know that 2 days before Louis died at the age of 97, his book came out, his own book up. And Luke, because you heard so many of your dad's stories as his only son, you know these stories almost as well as your father.
Well, almost, but I know them by heart.
Yes, you didn't live them, but you heard them many a time. And we've been working through the chapters of your dad's book, and we've talked about, you know, family and his faith. And in chapter one, there is a topic called A Race Isn't Over Until It's Over. And your dad was in the Olympics. He was a prisoner of war. Beautiful movie, Unbroken, directed by Angelina Jolie, about him. And in this particular story, A Race Isn't Over Until It's Over, what did he want to teach us?
Well, that primarily persistence, perseverance, and an unwillingness to accept defeat, even when things are looking, you know, hopeless. His experience was that he just would never give up. No matter what situation he found himself in, he'd find a way to make it work to his advantage. He would find a way to get through whatever struggle he had to get through. And, you know, as opposed to some people, when things seem hopeless, they just kind of give up and wait to die, and which was, you know, kind of what happened to one of his raft mates, Francis McNamara. He was just certain that they weren't going to survive this ordeal, and indeed, he was the one who had died on the raft on day 34, I believe.
And what was the total number of days they were on the raft?
They were on the raft for 47 days.
And his friend made it, you know, 2/3 of the way. But what's that famous quote? If you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. And so he believed he couldn't, and he's the one that did die on the raft of the three.
That's right. He was the one who kind of gave up hope. But my dad and the pilot, Russell Phillips, were able to keep that positive attitude going, and that's what got them through that that incredible ordeal. 47 days at sea with no provisions. It's just unbelievable.
Unbelievable that they survived and then survived prisoner of war camp in such a weakened condition as well.
Oh yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, my dad was, you know, he was, when the Japanese picked him up off the raft, his world-class body that was, when he was an Olympic athlete, he was 5'10". Weighing 155 pounds. When the Japanese picked him up off the raft, they weighed him, and he weighed in at 66 pounds.
What?
Yes. He'd lost a ton of body weight.
Wow.
And he's probably the only person you're ever going to hear about who actually gained weight in a Japanese prison camp.
Wow.
Because 27 months later, with the end of the war, he weighed a robust 90 pounds.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Okay. He talks a lot in the book, too, about being prepared. So I love the idea of a race isn't over until it's over, because he certainly never let it be over until, you know, he stuck it out till the end, always had that hope. What about preparation? The next chapter talks about preparation determines your survival.
Absolutely. I'll just say about his persistence and perseverance. You know, when he died, I think Tom Brokaw said it best. It said Louis Zamperini never gave up. He just ran out of time.
Yes, and, that's true, huh? So,
yes. So, you know, what people don't realize is that when his plane crashed in the ocean that day in 1943, he was actually prepared for that ordeal at sea. He was a Boy Scout when he was a youth, and he actually made Eagle Scout. And in the Scouts, he learned a lot of survival tactics, and he also had learned that bullets would lose their velocity in about 3 feet of water. So, you know, later on the 27th day of their ordeal at sea, they were being strafed by a Japanese bomber. And so, you know, his quick thinking, he just dove overboard and got low enough in the water to escape the bullets. Of course, the problem was when he got down there, he had discovered that there were two sharks that had been following him around for a few weeks, and the sharks were very much interested in him in the water.
Wow.
And so he recalled another incident came to mind. When he was stationed in Hawaii, they offered a class on survival at sea to all the servicemen in the Hawaiian Islands. And there's probably 50,000 soldiers there. My dad was one of 15 men that took this course. And it was specifically about how to survive in the water with sharks.
Wow.
And so, you know, he's in the water, avoiding the bullets from the strafing. He grabs a hold of the line that's attached to the raft so it doesn't float away from him. And here comes the shark. And the shark comes up, and he says that, you know, in the training class, they told him that the first thing you want to do is try to show him the whites of your eyes and your teeth to try to scare the shark away. And he did that, but it didn't work. So the next thing he had to do was when the shark got close enough to him, he reached out with his free hand and just straight-armed the shark. He just pushed off on the shark's nose And apparently the sharks' noses are sensitive, and it makes them jet away. And so this gave him enough time to get up to the surface and get more air. Here comes the airplane coming back to strafe him again. So he gets back down there, and here he is with the shark again, and he has to straight arm a second time. And I said, "Well, Dad, what did you like punch it in the nose?" He goes, "Oh no, you can't do that because if you miss, and your hand goes in his mouth, and you're done." So I just had to reach out, just like a running back in football, just reach out and just straight arm that shark, just push him away at his nose. And after the strafing was done, the men had calculated how long it that ordeal was, and they were being strafed for about 40 minutes. Which meant he was down there doing this ballet with sharks for at least half that amount of time. And it's just incredible. So, that plus when he was in college, he took physiology classes. And that's when he realized that the mind is like a muscle. It'll atrophy if you don't use it. And that's why he set out reliving how to make certain dishes that his mom taught him how to make, and came up with all these meals every day for the other two guys on the raft, these imaginary meals. And so, they would try to recite songs. They would try to recite hymns. They would try to recite the rosters of baseball teams. But mostly it was my dad reciting these recipes that did the trick for them.
To keep his mind sharp. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Luke, it's always such a pleasure to have you on the show. We're going to have you back. We're going to continue to follow through your dad's book, Don't Give Up, Don't Give In, Lessons from an Extraordinary Life. Next time we'll focus on what your dad calls his survival kit and keeping his mind sharp and not forgetting to laugh. We'll continue to work our way through the book. The website we can go to, Luke, to find your dad, Louis Zamperini's book?
The Louis Zamperini Foundation.org is the website, and there'll be links to the book and other information as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Luke.
Okay. It's a pleasure.
Spreading hope, joy, and goodness. 810 KLVZ, where love lives.
Hello, it's your pal Angie Austin. I have to tell you, if you enjoy the good news, I would love your support. I would love to team up with you, to partner with you, and help you grow your business or your nonprofit. And also, you could support the good news at the same time. I know all of my sponsors personally. I really enjoy working with these advertisers because we have friendships as well as a business relationship. This show means the world to me. I have a passion for sharing good news, and I have a passion for my faith, and I would also have a passion for you and building your business as well. You can reach me at AngieAustinNews@gmail.com. AngieAustinNews@gmail.com. I'd love to work with you. Do you ever feel like you're just searching for a church and you just can't find the right one? Well, I must have looked for about 10 years. I have to tell you, I've never been so excited to go to church. I feel that Pastor John Moreland, my pastor, that's you, John, has a real gift for teaching, and there's so much love in that church, and I've never felt more welcome. And I have to tell you, Pastor Moreland, I love going to church now. I learn something every week, and I just feel so blessed by you. It makes me cry.
Well, I'm humbled to hear you say that. Denver Christian Bible Church is about two things. One, we want to make genuine connections with people. And two, we want to genuinely connect those people to Jesus.
Thursday night, we connect. You can go to dinner. You get to know people. And then on Sundays, I just feel like it's a time of getting together and learning. And I feel I'm always hugged. I've never been hugged so many times in my life by people who are really happy to see me there. And so I feel like I'm growing, but I also feel like I have a support system at Denver Christian Bible Church. So if people would like to come, how do they reach you, Pastor Moreland?
Please go to our website. You can download our sermons for free and find out where we are, denverbible.org.
Rick Thielen with Life Choices is here, and we really want to support them. A lot of people think about giving at the end of the year, and in December, many people are thinking, hey, where would be a good place for me to donate? And I really believe in Life Choices. I think that they work with the feeling of love. Everyone that walks through the door, the comments I've read, Rick, from people who've come and gotten your services about, thank you so much for your prayer. It was a great experience, very comforting, non-judgmental. I like the encouragement. And once said, "You'll change my life. You changed my life more than you'll ever know." I mean, that is pretty encouraging right there. So I want people to support you guys.
Well, I always appreciate those comments because we do an exit interview or an exit survey with every client that comes in. And you know, 99.9% of them are all positive in that direction. One of the statements that I make to our staff and to our volunteers when we come in, we have an opportunity to impact a woman's life for 9 months, or we can impact it for eternity. And I choose that we impact it for eternity.
Well, a 15-year-old said, "I feel like I could be honest. It felt safe coming in there." 26-year-old, everything I liked. Friendly staff and nurses, so warm and inviting. Awesome experience. Another 18-year-old, "Everyone is extremely considerate and kind and easy to talk to. And I feel that non-judgmental feeling from these comments and the love." But for instance, right here, "I loved how you guys treat the people. Thank you so much for being loving and for your help." So I just want to say, in December, when you're thinking about giving, Life Choice is a very loving organization. A lot of lives are saved. Every time Rick comes in, he tells me how many babies were saved the week before. And I always joke with him that they're filling an elementary school with kids that they're saving, probably a middle school and high school by this time as well. And you're very supportive of the good news. So if you are one of my listeners, if you believe in what I do, Rick has been very supportive of the good news. And so part of the reason I'm able to be on the air is because of Rick's support. So please, if you can give to Life Choices this December, it would mean a lot to me. You can always contact me, Angie, AustinRadio.com, and email me, or Rick, they can go on your website as well, correct?
They sure can. They just go to lifematters.org, Angie, because life matters at Life Choices.
Give everyone a recap of what you do if they're not familiar with Life Choices. A lot of people just think pro-life. No, it's pro-love.
It is pro-love, and I like to say we're actually the real pro-choice organization because we let the women know what all their choices are and what the consequences of those choices are. So really, we have three main areas. One is advocacy for life, which we just were talking about right now.
And ultrasounds and we do that free.
Yes, we do it for free. Our pregnancy tests are free. They come to either five of our brick-and-mortar locations or our mobile medical clinic. So that's kind of our advocacy there. Our second area is education, and where we go into middle school and high school. And a lot of people don't know that Colorado requires abstinence training in the schools. And
interesting.
The odd part of it is we can't use the word abstinence because the students have never heard the word. So we use things like refusal skills.
Wait, back up. What did you just say?
We don't use the word abstinence because the students will sit there and look at us with this deer in the headlight look.
So you call it refusal skills.
Refusal skills, or setting boundaries, or being able to know where your limits are.
You're allowed to say no just because you see it on TV or all your friends are doing it. You're allowed to say no. And I love the comments that the exit interview, the kids saying things like, "I didn't realize that it was okay for me to decide when, if and when I wanted to get involved with someone sexually." And that kids feel like they have a lot more power and choices and control. And you teach them about respect, that boys respecting the girls and that caring about them means respecting them.
Well, and it goes both directions, both right. The girls respecting the boys.
Good point.
And, I remember this young boy, 15 years old, made a comment and said, "I'm so glad that I don't have to have sex because my family and my friends have been telling me that I need to have sex sooner
really?
Than later." And, so not only are we hitting in the culture and movies and TV, we're getting pressure from friends and from family.
And I love it that you have teen advocates, other
yes.
kids that are saying no,
yep.
that are within the school. So you've got your teaching, you do the ultrasounds, you even have after abortion care in terms of forgiven and set free. It's a Bible study that's about forgiveness. And what else?
That's that third area that we do is that forgiven and set free. So we do those three things, advocacy, education, and after abortion care.
Well, I love what you do, and I so appreciate your support. I would love it if at the end of the year in your giving, you would consider Life Choices. Find me, AngieAustinRadio.com, if you have questions about what Rick and Life Choices, what they do, or if you just want to go to their website.
Lifematters.org.
Excellent. Well, Rick, I want to thank you because you save lives in the most loving manner, and the feedback that you guys get that I read when you come in so touches my heart because I think so many of these girls are scared and they don't have anyone to help them. So thank you.
Thank you, Angie.
This is the place where love lives. 810 KLVZ.
Welcome back to the good news. So happy to have my friend Lee Clayton Roper on. Lee used to join me on TV when I worked at Channel 2 in Denver to do cooking segments, and her food is fabulous. And her second cookbook is out. It's called Fresh Tastes, and it's the second volume in her A Well-Seasoned Kitchen cookbook collection. And the beautiful thing about this collection is the first one, A Well-Seasoned Kitchen, came out of recipes that she and her mom put together when she was a child and into her adulthood. And as her mom was kind of, getting up there in years and losing her memory a little bit, Lee and her mom started to do this project together as a way of bonding before her mom passed away. And Lee, I just think it's like a beautiful mother-daughter love story, your first book, and now you've got the second one.
Well, thank you, Angie, and thanks for having me on today. Yes, it was. The first book truly was a labor of love. As you mentioned, it was a project that we started just for ourselves, really, when mom was getting older and really becoming less active and just couldn't do many of the things that she loved doing, and she was starting to get restless. Plus, she was starting to have some short-term memory issues. And so I kind of thought, well, we really need to get her active in some way. And through my dad had Alzheimer's at the time, and we knew through the Alzheimer's Association that the less active she became, the more rapid her memory loss would be. So she really loved to cook and entertain, among other things, but those were really her passions, and she was known for it. I mean, growing up, there were dinner parties in our household at least once a week, and they went from, most of them fairly casual, a lot of them last minute. And so mom had this repertoire of fabulous recipes that you could make largely from stuff that was in your pantry or that was very easily accessible ingredients at the grocery store, and a lot of which you could also make ahead. So we started collecting all those recipes together, and that kind of became our activity together instead of just watching television. And, she couldn't really cook as we went into testing the recipes, but she could certainly go through her recipe boxes and reminisce. And she really didn't know what day of the week it was or who the sitting president was. But, boy, she knew where her recipes were, and she remembered lots of really special stories about cute, fun things that had happened in the kitchen and at dinner parties.
I love that. And I remember you telling me once, that your mom's recipes would be like – in a book, in the cupboard, in the back drawer, tucked in something, and you'd be coming across these recipes all the time that were handwritten.
That's exactly right. I mean, I sort of naively thought they were all in these couple of recipe boxes that she had, but oh no, they were everywhere. As you said, all handwritten. I mean, they might be written in the margins of a cookbook. I mean, she would be looking at a recipe. Well, a good example, it's not in either of our books because I'm still sort of perfecting it, but it's one called Flemish Beer Stew. Or actually, an even better example is her coq au vin that is in the new book. There was a cookbook that had a coq au vin recipe in it, but she sort of read that recipe and then kind of created her own version of it. More often than not, something that was simpler, because mom just didn't want to or didn't have the time to spend, 4 hours in the kitchen making coq au vin. She had probably an hour and a half. So that was what she was going
to
do.
Okay, you have to tell me, what is that? I don't even know what that recipe is. What is that food?
Oh my God, coq au vin. Coq au vin is French, I guess, for chicken and wine. Oh. And it's a fabulous recipe, most of which that you can make ahead. It's got lots of really yummy ingredients in it. I'm just looking it up because a lot of times when I quote off the top of my head, I don't quote correctly. And then people always want to come back and tell me that I was wrong. So I'm just looking it up right now. But it's a dish. It's a traditional chicken dish. I mean, I'm sure, people like Jacques Pepin, Julia Child, anybody who is a chef that follows French techniques would make it in a much more traditional manner. And like I said, coq au vin can take quite a while. It's got a ton of flavor in it. It's almost like a chicken version of a beef stew.
Interesting.
Except the chicken is cooked in whole pieces. It's got, onion and bacon and carrots and let me just look. I found
I think is so herbs. Neat? You mentioned that your mom would simplify these recipes so you can make something that seems, fancy and so dinner party-ish, and then, put it out and not have slaved over the kitchen. And you've given me over the years several versions of recipes that have been simplified by your mom. And yep. As you're looking at the recipe, I just have to say I love the beginning of the book where your first one, A Well-Seasoned Kitchen, you wrote, this book is offered in heartfelt tribute to my late mother, Sally Clayton, whose natural grace, remarkable style, and strength serve as an inspiration for this book and for my life. It's also written in honor of my late father, Dr. Mac L. Clayton, whose love and encouragement made me believe I could do anything, include, write, and publish a cookbook. So how beautiful that that one was in honor of your parents, and it was so successful that now you've gone on to do another one. And all of this really was bred out of this legacy or traditions that your mother in particular started of entertaining, cooking, and your dad calling and saying, hey, I'm bringing three extra people home tonight.
That's right. It was very important to my parents that people, their friends, even acquaintances, whoever that they wanted to have build a relationship or a bond with, that they come to our home for dinner. My parents loved to eat. My mother was, as I said, a fabulous cook. You know, some people said, oh, she was so gourmet. But like I said, that was kind of her, almost like smoke and mirrors. She could put these meals on the table that were super impressive, but really super uncomplicated to prepare. But it was really important to them to get people around the table. I mean, they just felt like it's just so special when you have cooked something yourself for someone. I think they're so appreciative of it. And there's just this spirituality to it. It's very hard to put your finger on, but it's a very different feeling when you're in somebody's home eating dinner with them, something they've prepared for you that you're enjoying, versus when you're sitting in a restaurant. You might be eating an equally as delicious meal, but it's just not the same. And
you know, it's interesting you say that about food and love, because one of my girlfriends who became a widow at the age of 30 with two young boys, it's been several years, and she just has fallen in love again. And she just tagged something, when cooking becomes fun again, and then she tagged it when love comes back. And she was expressing that now that she has someone that she's in love with, she loves cooking again because she has someone that appreciates the love she puts into the cooking, not two little boys who were like, ew, fish and paper, that's so gross. You know, so it's like the love of cooking came back with the love in her life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, I learned that from my parents, but I also learned it from other people. And that's kind of that inspiration is what I've taken that leads from the first book into the second book. Is the second book in Fresh Tastes from A Well-Seasoned Kitchen. I talk a bit about not only obviously what I learned from mom and dad, but also what I learned from other people over the years, both in and out of the kitchen, my grandmother, who, you know, or my Uncle Bill, my mother's brother. You know, my grandmother was a fabulous cook as well, but she was funny because she might follow recipes, but it was very sort of loosely done, and she didn't own measuring spoons. She measured everything in her hand. You know, she could just eyeball everything from a quarter of a teaspoon to two tablespoons in the palm of her hand. And I thought, you know, and so she, to her, it was always what was so important was as she was cooking, it was all about tasting. What does it taste like? Or if she was kneading dough, what does it feel like? And to kind of go with her instinct. And I sort of learned, obviously, to cook that way in a lot of ways. But also, you know, there's sort of a life lesson in there of, you know, just go with what you feel, what's in your gut. And don't worry about having to do everything sort of step by step and exact in an exact way or a measurable way in your life. Just take that same learning as you go forward. And, you know, there's a couple different, there's several different lessons like that in the second book as well.
You know, I know you have something. People are just joining us. And if you're in our Denver market, Fresh Tastes from A Well-Seasoned Kitchen, Lee is going to have a book signing at another one of our friends' establishments, a beautiful dress a shop. So tell everyone about that this Friday.
The signing is this Friday. It's at Mariel Boutique, which is in Cherry Creek North. 3000 East 3rd is the address. It's roughly on, it's on 3rd Avenue, sort of between Milwaukee and St. Paul. And it's December 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. And it's going to be fun. It's a little holiday open house that she's having. I'm going to have an hors d'oeuvre or two from the book. And I believe Denise is pouring wine. And at some point, I think Santa's coming by. So, and she's got some things on sale. So, and I'll be signing and personalizing books there. The book is also available at a number of different retailers around town. The bookstore, The Bookies, carries it. The Lark carries it. Complete Lifestyles carries it. The Cupboard in Fort Collins, if you reach up that far, actually also has copies. They've always been a big supporter of me, and they always have the book as well. The Tattered Covers, I don't know if they have it in stock right now or not. They do carry my books, but they don't order from me. They order.
Well, and you can always just go on Amazon too.
Correct.
If you're not in this market, and if you want to go, because I'm on there right now, and the pictures are just so beautiful. And just out of curiosity, not being a cookbook author myself, do you make these things, or do you hire someone then to make them for the pictures, or do you make them and then bring them in to take photos? I'm curious how you get, because your cookbooks are known for the beautiful photographs, and to me, that really makes making the recipe more exciting to have a beautiful picture.
I agree. Four color photography is very, very important in cookbooks. I hired a team, a photography team, and it's interesting that you asked because there was a number of different people involved. There is a food stylist, he's called. His name is Stephen Shern, and he is, and his assistant, Jen Fletcher, actually prepare the food for the shot. Wow. Now, there's two different schools of thought in food photography. One is you doctor or enhance it to make it look the most beautiful. The other one is you follow the recipe exactly. I am in the latter category. I feel like it's very important that the photographs in my book reflect exactly what it's going to look like when you make it at home. So
I agree. I don't know
any doctoring or enhancing. So they're made exactly to the recipe. Stephen and Jen make it. Then there's somebody, Brenda Christie is her name. She's the prop stylist. And so she then picks out the props that will make the food stand out and look the prettiest in the shot.
Wow.
And the photographer then kind of looks at the food, looks at the props Brenda's picked out, kind of finalizes all that, arranges the shot, and actually shoots it after Stephen arranges the food.
That is fascinating because as I'm looking at it, there's like a salad that appears to have, nuts and some cheese on top of it and like a squash colored item in it. And what's fascinating to me is it's roasted butternut squash. But I wouldn't have noticed had he not told me that they match like the napkin. So it's the same color as the squash or they have some nuts on the side. It's just really beautiful how it's an art form.
It is. And what's interesting is because my brand name is, quote unquote, a well-seasoned kitchen, that's why you see the nuts in the background. You'll always see like an herb or an ingredient or something in the background because they wanted that sort of a subtle reflection of the seasoned component of my brand.
Oh, I love that. Well, and let's kind of review a little bit. Again, we're talking to Lee Clayton Roper, and we're talking about her new book, Fresh Taste from a Well-Seasoned Kitchen. Lee and I worked on TV together. She would come in and do cooking segments. That's how we first became friends. And we're just talking about the legacy that her mother started bringing her father's business associates in for dinner parties, and she grew up like that. And her dad would call at the last minute and say, hey, we're bringing some people over. But I really think, especially in Christian circles, and we're on Christian affiliates, that there is that feeling of camaraderie and getting together still, even though I feel like the dinner party, my generation may not be doing as much of that as your mom's generation. But I feel like in the Christian circles, we used to have something called Bible Party on Thursdays, and everybody would bring food, and it'd be kind of a gathering. And I interviewed another author, Shauna Nyquist, recently, and she wrote the book Savor. And same thing, she talks about getting together, friends and family, not making it fancy, but you think people are intimidated because they think they have to have, the perfect centerpiece and the perfect this and that. And it just has to be about food, family, friends, love, and fun, and not all the pomp and circumstance. And you mentioned, as far as like people worry about the centerpiece, how you do that when you're shopping. Can you mention that?
Right. What I do, because I often, I'm very much of my mother's school, and for my mother, it was all about the food and, having the table look pretty, as long as all she wanted was to make the food look fabulous. So I'm kind of the same way. And what that means, fortunately or unfortunately, is I often kind of forget about the centerpiece. So usually what I end up doing more often than not is a day or two before I'm having people over, whenever I'm in the grocery store shopping, I'm usually at Whole Foods to get some of the ingredients that I want because I do like to eat very fresh and organic when I can, but that's another discussion. But anyway, I'll usually be in there and I stop by at the floral section and I find whoever works in that section, if they're not there, we pick out flowers together. Sometimes if I remember, I have a small little vase or a bowl or something with me, but if not, they have very inexpensive ones there. We pick out the flowers and they arrange them for me while I'm shopping. And then by the time it's ready for me to check out, I swing back by there and I pick them up, check out, come home, put the flowers on the table, done. Simple. Put some placemats out. You don't even have to you can sit at the table, you can do things buffet. One of the things I was kind of trying to think back when I first started entertaining, and I know with my group of friends when we were all, young and many people had young kids and we were all super busy, what we did, and Angie, when you were speaking, it reminded me of this. We used to do potlucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, whoever's house it was would do the main dish and then would kind of assign everybody, okay, like you bring an appetizer, you bring a dessert. My book club once a month gets together. There's only six of us and each month somebody cooks. But for Christmas, we invite our spouses. And so there's 12 of us and we do it potluck.
Mm-hmm.
We're just doing this right now. I mean, we have our dinner next week and my assignment is to bring a vegetable. So, you know, and that makes it easier, I think, and less onerous if you're just starting to kind of dip your toe in the water into this. Mm-hmm. But really, I think what people don't understand is pick recipes where you can make the majority of it ahead. That's what we're all about in both A Well-Seasoned Kitchen and Fresh Tastes. Pick things that aren't complicated. They do not have to be complicated to be delicious and impressive. I teach cooking classes about this all the time. You know, in both cookbooks, we have recipes for fish, what's called en papillote, which is wrapped in parchment paper, but you can wrap them in foil, which is even easier. And they're very impressive to present. They're both really actually healthy recipes. They're delicious. They take 10 minutes to prepare if you don't even want to have to do it ahead. And
I've had that recipe. You've made that when you came in studio when you were on TV.
I did. Right. Yeah.
The sample. It was so delicious and simple.
Yeah. And we've got another one that's just as easy in the new book, which is a swordfish with a lemon rosemary swordfish, which you can do with almost any kind of fish. And
what do you want, Lee, when people read these books and they read a little bit about your mom and about you and how you'd entertain and cook together? Because my mom is already starting to cook with my daughter who's six and they love to cook together. And it's just a special time. She'll even wake my mom up. She lives with us now. My mom will get woken up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday to go make homemade pancakes with my daughter. And I'm like, are you her assistant or something? Like, why do you think you have to get up? She thinks that like you work for her. And she's like, well, if she wants to get up and cook, you know, wake me up to cook with her, then I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock on a Saturday to go cook with her. Well, nobody else in the house will get up that early. I'll tell you that much. So with that, because I get up early during the week. So with that said, they're making this bond together, creating this bond together that you and your mom did. So what do you want people when they read the new book, Fresh Taste, to walk away with and to learn?
What I want them to learn is that number one, cooking delicious, fresh food is not complicated and not difficult and not overly time consuming. I want them to learn that it's really important to take the extra 5 or 10 minutes to do that and to have your family at a minimum and with your friends on occasion, sit down around the table and eat together. I'm horrified by these stories that I hear where these mothers will put out food on top of the stove and then as the family feels like it, they just go in there and grab a plate and put it on, you know, grab the food, put it on the plate and go back to their computers or televisions in their own respective rooms and eat dinner. That is not, you know, you need to be around the table together. You need to be sharing and laughing and talking and bonding and having those spiritual loving times together. And I think it's really important. And I'm trying to show people that it's not difficult and it's very rewarding. I mean, I get emails from people. I mean, there's actually a testimonial on the website under something about my cooking classes where this one woman came to one of my classes and she said, "You've changed my life." Aww. She said, "Now, you know," she said, "I used to feel guilty because I would go out to people's houses for dinner and I could never reciprocate. And now it's like they come over and I can cook these things and they're not hard and they're all so impressed by what comes out of my kitchen. And I love this."
That's so cool. So,
yeah. And, you know, that's really what I want, because I think we can really enrich each other's lives in such a positive way by doing this. And I think there is interest. I mean, I'm starting to have kids in their 20s contact me because I put together a little brochure and it's called Let's Build a Better Dinner Party. And it's all my, you know, tips on how to throw a dinner party. And I've got some more on our website as well, which is seasonedkitchen.com. And I'm starting to get more and more requests. At one of my book signings, the brochures were out and it was all these kids in their 20s who were there that were taking the brochures. So there's an interest. It's coming back, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows. And, you know, when those kids get married and have kids, then maybe they'll be a little bit more concerned about it. But if they can start now and start seeing how they can do it in a very almost kind of more casual, uncomplicated delicious way, then maybe they'll keep doing it. Who knows?
Well, let's, be honest. Some of the best memories are friends and family gathering around the table with food. And we like to talk about God's fingerprints on our day. Talk to the kids about like the magical moment of their day, what really stood out and how God's working in their day. And it's a special time for the family. So I'm glad that you're helping that to come back around. I want to make sure, Lee, that people can find your website. So tell us your website and then the Marielle event on Friday again.
The website is seasoned with an ED, seasonedkitchen.com. And the event on Friday is at Marielle Boutique, 3000 East 3rd Avenue in Cherry Creek North, from 4 to 6 p.m.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Lee.
Thanks, Angie. It was nice to chat with you.
Lee Clayton Roper. Thanks. Bye, Lee.
Bye.
Proclaiming the love of Christ through the airwaves. 810 KLVZ, where love lives.
Hey, it's Angie. Do you have dreams and goals that you really want to reach and you don't know how to reach them? You feel lost, like you don't have a roadmap to your dreams? Do you need like a big jolt of coffee? Well, that's Carrie Conley. She has a big event coming up and every year I go and it helps me reach my goals. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how you doing? Yes, very, very excited about the event. It's called Vision is Victory. It's the third annual. It's in January 2016, the 14th through the 16th in Scottsdale, Arizona. It'll be beautiful.
And I'll be there. You'll be there. Tickets are very reasonable right now. Great excuse to get away from Colorado in the cold winter months. And you really teach us every single step we have to take what we want in life and actually put it into actionable steps and reach our goals.
That's right. I want people walking out knowing exactly what to do and how to get there.
And in 3 days, we learn that.
You do.
I
and
did.
And meet some really awesome people and have a lot of fun.
It is a blast. And I learn so much every year that I go. All right, Carrie Conley, how do we reach you?
InfiniteNation.com.
InfiniteNation.com. Hi, it's Angie Austin. Have you ever thought about mentoring someone? Well, guess what? We need you. The Denver Rescue Mission needs mentors for kids and adults. Hello, Alexa with the Denver Rescue Mission. So how can we help you?
You can sign up to be a mentor for a child or an adult, people who are in one of the Denver Rescue Mission programs. And you basically sign up at denverrescuemission.org. And for mentoring, there's a little bit more involved. You may have to do a background check and some of those things. But it's a few times a month commitment. And you can spend, an hour or so with a kiddo or an adult and really pour into their lives a little bit when they've come from some situations in their lives and just be a friend.
Yeah, be a friend. And you've been mentoring someone and you find mentoring that young gal very satisfying.
I do. I'm mentoring a 14-year-old girl and it's been just a blast. So I really encourage you to, look into it.
And give us your website again.
DenverRescueMission.org.
810 KLVZ. Brighton, Aurora, and Colorado Springs, where love lives.
This is Mike Treem, station manager of KLVZ, reminding you that some of the sponsors and segments that you hear on The Good News help us bring you The Good News and Angie Austin every day.
Welcome back to The Good News. Well, do you stress about money? Well, do you want to raise kids who are responsible with money and not stressing about it? Because it is the cause of a lot of marital strife as well. Well, a new study reveals that millennials are chronically stressed about money. So what do we need to know to avoid that situation with our own kids? And what do we need to know in general, maybe to avoid that situation for ourselves? Andrew Plepler with Bank of America is here to talk to us about the study and to inform us. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You betcha. So tell us more about this millennials being chronically stressed about money. I'm not surprised, but let's get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. We weren't surprised either. It's an interesting contrast. The study shows that millennials are financially confident. They're taking financial matters seriously.
Oh,
they're learning about financial habits and practices, and therefore they have a good degree of confidence, but yet, as you note, they are chronically stressed and have a high level of anxiety about financial security.
All right. So they have anxiety. It's adversely affecting their emotional well-being, but it's also affecting their relationships, you found, as well. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, when people experience, I'm not an expert on this, but when people, it's not surprising to know that when people experience high levels of stress, it flows into other parts of their lives and whether that's relationships or, just your ability to enjoy your day-to-day life is affected when you're feeling that level of anxiety. And part of our goal is to try and provide some tools to help people manage that stress and mitigate the stress.
Yeah, let's break that down, because I know you guys found that only a third feel content, and you mentioned the anxiety, but 22% feel overwhelmed. And that obviously is not just going to adversely affect your relationships. That's going to adversely affect all aspects of your life if you feel overwhelmed in terms of finances. So let's talk about some tips on creating better money habits in general.
Well, that was the whole theory behind the development of this website, bettermoneyhabits.com, a partnership between Bank of America and the Khan Academy. Sal Khan is a real innovator in education, specifically to the topic you identified, breaking down complicated, sometimes overwhelming topics into accessible, digestible information. And that's the objective of this site, not to overwhelm people, but to break down, help people budget, save, manage credit, understand your paycheck, things that are relevant to you today, where you can get real digestible information and apply it to your financial life.
All right. Now, in terms of millennials, because I know that was the specific focus, but a lot of these go across the age barriers and affect a lot of people. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see people make financially?
Not taking advantage of 401k plans, I think, is one of the real challenges for people, certainly for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
401ks that are offered by employers and in many cases are matched. So you're really losing the opportunity to get free money into a 401k that over the long term will really grow and compound and provide you long-term financial security. So we'd really like to see millennials start early and develop those financial habits to save for the longer term.
I agree. Our kids are 6, 8, and 10, and they all have bank accounts. So I'm telling you, my 10-year-old knows to the penny how much money is in there.
That, if we could get everybody to do that, that would go a long way. Your 10-year-old will experience a lot less stress with those habits.
Yeah, well, we're pretty conservative financially, but that's kept a lot of stress out of our marriage. And in other romantic news, my husband said, if you weren't so responsible financially, I probably would have never married you. I'm like, oh, that's so romantic. Thank you. Thank you.
Whatever it takes.
All right, Andrew, I want to make sure that people can get additional info. Give us the website again.
BetterMoneyHabits.com.
Excellent. Always fun to talk to you, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Good News with Angie Austin. Find the podcast of past shows at AngieAustinRadio.com.